From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, we'll dabble with the supernatural. Here's what's happening. A dispute between multiple people led to a shooting in downtown Seattle during tonight's rush hour, killed one person, critically wounded at least seven others, including a nine-year-old little boy. Investigators are searching for the suspects who fled in all directions. Seattle. 3 weeks after Chinese officials announced the outbreak of a new virus, more than 400 people now have been sickened. 17 people have died there, leading to questions of just how alarmed the public should be. The coronavirus began at an animal and seafood market in the city of Wuhan and has since spread to several other countries, including the United States, a case in Seattle. The illness is now said to be transferable between humans. We assigned Howard Bloom onto this topic. And Howard, what have you unraveled for us on this thing?
Here's the story. In December, a new disease showed up in the city of Wuhan in China. It had cold symptoms, coughing and a fever, but it had something more. It could produce trouble breathing and create lesions on your lungs. Within weeks, medical experts had determined that it was a new virus, a coronavirus, like 2002's SARS virus, mm-hmm. Middle East Respiratory Syndrome virus. They named it 2019 nCoV, and medical experts found that the new Wuhan virus was transmitted from animals to humans. Just as you said, it came from a seafood market, the Wuhan seafood market, that reportedly also sold live fish, animals, and chickens. And then, as you said, it was discovered that it could be transmitted from one person to another, and estimates were that a single infected person could infect between 10 and 30 others. By today, 17 people have died, and at least 540 have been infected, including people in Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, Thailand, and the case in Washington State that you just talked about. All of those people had some connection to China and Wuhan. Now, tomorrow, Thursday, the World Health Organization plans to announce whether the Wuhan coronavirus is a disease of international concern, a global emergency. But there are three things that the medical community is really afraid of. In 1918, the world was hit with a flu pandemic that killed more people than all those killed in World War I, the war that was just coming to an end. In fact, 50 million people died worldwide in the Great Pandemic of 1918. That's more than the entire population of England at the time. Since then, medical experts have gotten much better at finding pandemics. 20 years ago, it takes 6 months to identify a new virus. This one, the Wuhan coronavirus, only took roughly 2 weeks. But there are other problems. The city of Wuhan has more people than New York. And this is the time of year for one of the biggest mass migrations in human history, the Chinese New Year, when hundreds of millions of Chinese head home to see their families. Jeez. In other words, if you were a virus, this would be the perfect time to hitchhike with Chinese citizens streaming out of the cities on vacation. This would be the perfect time to spread all over China, then all over the globe. But there are sometimes advantages to a dictatorship. China's dictator Xi Jinping has announced that his priority is to save lives. To do that, he has shut down all forms of transportation in and out of Wuhan, trains, planes, ferries, subways, and buses. He has quarantined a city with a population the size of the entire population of Cuba. And airports in L.A., New York, San Francisco, Atlanta, and Chicago have followed his lead and are now screening passengers for signs of the Wuhan virus. There's one more scary factor. The Wuhan coronavirus is mutating and may find ways evade our drugs and precautionary measures. However, here's a bit of mixed reassurance. The last coronaviruses to hit, SARS and MERS, in 2002 and 2003, only killed 774 people. Compare that to the 61,000 Americans who die of the standard, ordinary flu each year. And you can see that the real pandemic is the flu we take for granted, an illness that, along with the common cold, we have not yet conquered.
Howard, thank you for the report. Howard Bloom's website, howardbloom.net. Well, day two of President Trump's impeachment trial is over. They resume tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern time. Today, the Democrats accused President Trump at his impeachment trial of a corrupt scheme to pressure Ukraine to help him get reelected and warn that America's global prestige would suffer if the U.S. Senate acquits him. The Republican Trump sounded a defiant note, telling reporters in Switzerland, where he is, that the Democrats did not have enough evidence to find him guilty and remove him from office. Dr. Jerome Corsi, author of many numerous research books, on the line with us here. Jerry, give us an update on your thoughts on today's proceedings.
Well, George, today we heard largely Adam Schiff, Representative Schiff, lead the accusations against President Trump on Ukraine. And mostly, I think it was a repetition. It was old information, nothing really new. I don't think any votes are changing in the Senate at all. In fact, for, I think, the average person, almost myself included, it was really pretty boring. And just hour after hour after hour of listening to these recitations of old information. So I think unless something new is developing, and I don't see it in the coming, it looks to me like this is a non-event, that there's not 20 GOP senators who are going to vote to remove Donald Trump from office. So I think the final verdict is to acquit.
It's strange. It's almost as if nobody wants to be able to get anything done here.
It's very hard to watch. This is not good television. It may be...
It's boring.
It's very boring. I mean, it's a great way to, you know, if you're an insomniac, turn it on. You'll definitely go to sleep. It's just hour after hour after hour, and it's, you know, one person talking. It's very formal in the Senate. It's not an exciting or interesting proceeding, and it's going to go on for a couple more days. It'll probably go on through the weekend before it gets anything, you know, anything dramatic. The main thing dramatic is whether there will be witnesses called.
Exactly, and that's bizarre too. You've got this impeachment trial and no witnesses yet.
Well, in fact, the trial was supposed to have been, you know, the actual indictment. The basic trial material was supposed to come out of the House, and the House did not call a lot of these witnesses because they didn't want to go through the judicial procedure of conflict over executive privilege being challenged in the courts. So now the whole issue is whether John Bolton is going to be testifying, and he, of course, was fired by President Trump, and the Democrats think there might be something there, but the Democrats have been disappointed before. They wanted Robert Mueller, to testify before Representative Nadler's committee, the House Judiciary Committee. That was a flop. I don't think they're going to find anything of significance to remove President Trump from office. And the answer, I think, is the election coming up in November.
Exactly. Jerry, keep monitoring for us. Appreciate it. In Davos, Switzerland, where I mentioned President Trump is meeting with world leaders, he said today that he did not consider the brain injuries suffered by 11 U.S. service members in Iran's recent attack on a base in Iraq to be serious, as the American military moved more troops out of the region for potential injuries. Nearly 200 animals living in what authorities described as one of the most toxic environments they'd ever encountered, rescued from a home in Texas. The homeowners had called a chicken rescue group to remove some chickens from the property. The group then alerted authorities after seeing the conditions of the home. Animal rescue officials said chickens, roosters, rabbits, ducks, parakeets, pigs, cats, and dogs were found living in the home, some in rooms covered in dirt, urine, and feces. At least one animal, a bird, was found dead. The National Weather Service in Miami has issued an unofficial warning for falling iguanas due to the unusual cold snap that hit the state. The iguanas are cold-blooded. They slow down or become immobile when the temps drop into the 40s, and they may simply fall from the trees. They're not dead, but they're just stiffened up when they fall. Strange story there. In a moment, the man who brought us the starch solution, Dr. John McDougall, back with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, back with Dr. John McDougall. Dr. McDougall is a board-certified internist, author of a number of national best-selling books, including The Starch Solution and The Healthiest Diet on the Planet. He's a practicing physician. He supervises all teaching and medical activities with his live McDougall program in Santa Rosa, California, and other activities include weekly webinars, seminars, and health-oriented adventure vacations. Dr. John McDougall, back on Coast to Coast. Hey, John, how are you?
Well, thank you very much, George, tonight's the night for the children. So particularly my grandchildren. I have seven of them.
Wow, good for you. I've got six grandchildren myself and one great-grandchild.
You know, but my goal, George, honestly, is that after I'm gone, my grandchildren never look back and say, Grandpa, why didn't you try harder? You know, life is going to be so tough for them. They have such a difficult future looking for them with the changing climate. I'm going to do everything I can. I certainly appreciate your opportunity tonight to share with people what I really think is the problem, the fact that we have an emergency, and really I have a partial solution. I think we can do something about this, George.
What got you to this position, John?
Well, you know, I've been interested in a good diet for a long time. I've spent 50 years as a doctor and 40 years taking care of people with primarily diet. And what I've shown over the last 40 years, and we've published scientific research on this, is that people are sick from the rich Western diet, from eating all the meat and the dairy and so on. And if you take them off that rich Western diet, is what happens is they naturally heal. They get better. And I've been doing that for over 40 years, and we published that in many medical journals, showing benefits like reduction in cholesterol, weight loss is effortlessly, getting rid of type 2 diabetes, multiple sclerosis, stopping that, and so on. So, you know, I've been very interested in diet and how beneficial it is in terms of my patient population. Well, in 2006, you remember The Inconvenient Truth by Al Gore.
Right.
Yeah, he came out in 2006, and he told us that the planet's on fire. And, of course, it upset all of us. And then what followed was another report, which was Livestock's Long Shadow. And that was November 2006, and that was by the World Bank. And what they said is that 18% of the greenhouse gases are produced by livestock compared to 13.5% produced by all of transportation. Well, I look back at what Al Gore had to say in The Inconvenient Truth. You know, George, he didn't mention diet once.
No, it never came up.
It never came up. And, you know, beef in particular, but ruminants in general, are a major contributor to climate change and one we can do something about. Now, so I got interested after hearing that 18% figure that was due to livestock and realizing that I've taught a diet that's free of livestock for 40 years. I've taken care of 12,000 people. And the same diet I could see back in November 2006 would not only heal my patients, but it would heal the planet. So I got very interested in a good diet back in 2006, so it's been 14 years. Well, shortly after that, a fellow by the name of Robert Goodland and another fellow by the name of Anghan, they came out with a reevaluation of Livestock's Long Shadow. And what they determined, they did in things like the methane gases, mm-hmm. refrigeration and transportation and so on. What they figured was that it wasn't 18% of the greenhouse gases that were caused by livestock. We're talking about farm fish, we're talking about chicken, poultry, and primarily ruminants. But they estimated that 51% of the greenhouse gases are directly attributed to the livestock.
51%? That's huge.
And George, that goes as high as 87%. Of the agriculture production of greenhouse gases come from livestock. And that's, you can find that figure if you look at a white paper that's under a website called Climate Healers. And they went and reanalyzed the data. Now, you know, we're talking about people consuming a food that is very wasteful. It takes 20 pounds of grain to, you know, build one cow or 1 pound of beef. It's very wasteful in that manner. It takes a tremendous amount of feed. What the estimates are is that 23% of the land, ice-free land on Earth, is used for grazing, and 33% is used for growing food for the livestock. So we've got about half the planet is being farmed, agriculture, cutting down the forest, making pasture land. And as a result, it's putting tremendous stress on the environment.
Is your concern, John, though, that it's really destroying the environment or it's no good for us health-wise?
Both.
All right, so it's a double whammy.
Yeah, it's one U-turn, George. Just one U-turn, and we solve two problems. One is the major chronic diseases that people have, obesity, diabetes, breast, colon, prostate cancer, diabetes, and the other is we give the planet a chance to heal. Now, one of the things that I learned over the years is that the body naturally heals itself. And I know I'm stretching your audience a little bit, but I just want to tell you, as a doctor, you make everything as right as you can in a patient's environment, and then you step back, and the body naturally heals. I mean, think about it. Last time you fell down, you know, you skinned your knee or you broke a finger or a wrist or something, and you didn't say to yourself, well, what do I have to do to make this heal? It naturally heals. All you have to do is provide the environment.
Right.
You have to stop the injuries. Well, what I found out is the same thing applies to the planet. And we're going to get into that this evening. If you stop the repeated injury from the carbon dioxide that's produced by transportation and all of the other uses, the coal, the gas, the natural gas, and so on, if you've got to stop that. We have to deal with transportation. We have to deal with energy. But these are problems that will take a long time to solve. The food is a problem that we can solve overnight. And what we have found, and again, you can go to a website called Climate Healers, what you find if you stop destroying the environment by the things that I talked to you about, overgrazing, cutting down forests, burping methane gas into the environment, producing CO2 from respirations, et cetera, when you stop doing that, the planet, just like the human body, naturally wants to heal. So it starts sequestering carbon dioxide. The plants start growing back. Yes, we can plant some trees to help along. But, you know, we have a chance, George. That's what I wanted an opportunity to tell your audience tonight, is that as dismal as things look, I mean, 10% of Australia is gone. 2 weeks ago, they had a piece on 60 Minutes where Venice is flooding. George, I lost everything I materially own October 9th, 2017, in the wildfires of California.
Oh,
the
geez.
Planet is burning to death. We have to do something drastic. And I wanna end my long statement by saying something really important, and that is this is an unmentionable. Diet is an unmentionable. You know, I know we're not supposed to get into politics, and I don't want to get into politics, but on the Republican side, they hardly ever mention climate change. The Democrats do hardly any better. I mean, Cory Booker's a vegan. He was asked whether or not people should give up all their animal products in their diet. He said no. Yang said, yeah, he knows meat destroys the environment, but you don't have to change your diet. Jay Inslee, the Washington governor who ran on a ticket of only climate change, he didn't even mention diet. This is the great unmentionable. Even Greta Thunberg.
Well, maybe they're not aware, John, of the statistics that you just mentioned.
Well, you know, they are, George. I think it's just too personal, to tell you the truth. I think it's too scary. I think people are paralyzed.
I've changed my meat consumption dramatically over the last several years. Let me tell you what happened. I mean, I used to eat my steaks and things like that. And I haven't stopped it entirely, but I mean, I probably dropped it 90%. And I tape these television programs in the Denver area once a month. And every time I'm going to the studio, I drive past a farm that has cattle out there by the hundreds.
Right.
And I looked at these things and I'm just saying, I'm eating those. And for some reason, it had a mental effect on my head.
Huh.
And that's what got me to slow down, almost stopping. It's just the fact that I saw the cattle walking around live and it just kind of turned me.
Yeah, well, you drive down I-5, it smells so bad you can hardly stand the odor. You know, the manure produces all kinds of nitrous oxide, which is 300 times more powerful than carbon dioxide. I mean, there are all kinds of things that come out of that cattle farm.
John, we're going to take a quick break, but I want to ask you how you think you can get people to stop this. in order to change it. And then, of course, we want to get into your starch solution diet, which is an amazing story all by itself. We'll be back in a moment. Dr. John McDougall, his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He's got a number of books out there, including The Starch Solution and The Healthiest Diet on the Planet. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with Dr. John McDougall. John, how do you convince people to avoid eating these kinds of dairy products and livestock foods that are hurting the environment? How do you get them to change?
You know, first of all, I think the day of climate deniers has passed, George. So we're not dealing with that anymore. We're dealing with people that understand and they do believe, but they don't believe enough to take action. And that's what we have to do, is we have to get people to an actionable stage. You know, I would suggest that people start by reading Livestock's Long Shadow, which was published in 2006 by the United Nations, by the FAO, funded by the Food Bank or the World Bank. They also need to read the World Watch Institute and look at 51% of the greenhouse gases coming from the livestock industry. And then we have the Lancet Commission that came out in January of 2019, which said that we really almost immediately have to change to a diet worldwide where people at most eat a piece of meat on Sunday or once a week. So they can start by realizing that about half, and I would say half is very conservative, about half of the destruction of our environment in terms of climate change is caused by our agriculture, particularly the livestock industry. Now, I want to give you some references, George, because there are a few people out in your audience that want to look at this and check my calculations.
Okay.
There's a PLOS, or excuse me, a public National Academy of Science, Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. It was published in April of 2016. And what they showed, that if you give up the animal products, what you could do is, and we're talking about a diet like I recommend, we're talking about as much as a 70% reduction from what would occur in 2050. A 70% reduction in greenhouse gases. PLOS-1. Okay, there was another 2016 article, The Impact of Dietary Change on Greenhouse Gas Emissions. They tell us that we can reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 80% and land use, water use, by 50%. And then there's one other journal article. It's the Journal of Cleaner Production, and that was published in 2015. Anyway, there are three reports that tell you that we can cut our greenhouse gas emissions let's just say by 70% by changing to a really healthy diet. I'm talking about one without any animal products, as a starch-based diet. If you figure half the greenhouse gases are due to the livestock industry, and a good diet followed worldwide could cut those emissions in half, we're talking about reducing the greenhouse gas emissions potentially overnight by 25%.
And making us healthier.
Well, you know, the Paris climate change wants us to reduce the greenhouse gases by 7.5% per year. We can do it overnight, if we get people to buy in. Yeah, they need a healthier diet. We would change the whole health of the planet. People are being overnourished, like Americans and Australians and most Europeans, are going to be able to have extra food for the people who are undernourished. So, I mean, it's a win-win situation.
There's something holding them back, though, John. There's got to be something.
Well,
what is it?
Well, there is. You know, people's diets are very personal. Plus, we have an entire industry. We have the livestock industry where most of the money is produced. I mean, how much money do you make in potatoes? How much money do you make
and rice and stuff like that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're talking about an economic thing. And, of course, those who have the economic advantages are in charge. The ones who are going to suffer most from climate change are the ones that are least privileged. And that's a fact. But everybody's going to suffer. I mean, the predictions, remember, when we first started talking about this back, say, 15 years ago, the first intergovernmental climate change report came out 30 years ago. Now the Intergovernmental Climate Change Panel came out in September of last year, 2019, said that we have 10 to 12 years And they've actually modified that. So, look, we got to change now or we're not going to be able to do it. Well, what I'm proposing is that we all get very, very serious about the diet. Because, you know, George, people are going to change their diet either by choice or by necessity.
Right. Some scare. You know, something happens.
Yeah, food will become so scarce. And I've got to put this in perspective. You've got to, I want to try and share with people what they're giving up. When they paint the picture of a delicious meal, say a fast food restaurant or any other kind of restaurant, what you see is you see a burger, you see the lettuce, the tomato, the bun, the ketchup, you know, all of the color, the interest, and so on. And that's what people are attracted to. Now, if you took all of that away, what you'd be left with, and this is going to offend some people, but what you're going to be left with is basically yellow and brown food that's malodorous and has either a bland or a distastefulness to it. And this is a food, we're talking about, you know, cheese and milk and beef and chicken and lamb and so on, and fish even. These are yellow and brown foods, and these are the foods that are sickening people and sickening the planet. They're also foods that fit the category of people do not want to hear, they don't want to hear, they want to hear good news about their bad habits, George. They just don't want to hear the planet is in such big trouble. You know, it is just too much to face, but we have to do it.
Are they deniers? Are we deniers?
We are deniers. And, you know, we all have to look back. And there are many reasons for it. I mean, it's difficult to change your diet. Consider only about 3% of the population that has made the type of dietary change that I'm talking about. But you see more and more people doing it, movie stars, politicians. You know, I would go through the different politicians that are following the vegan diet, but, of course, we get into politics then. But
I'm not a vegan, like I said, but I've changed it, dramatically.
Well, it took me 2 years to change my diet. I changed my diet almost a half a century.
Are you 100% off beef and things like that?
I have since 1977. I've had fewer than a handful of animal products a year.
Well, there's no question that the animals are contributing. I did not know it was that high a percent, John.
Yes, and the important thing to know, George, and again, I share my experience as a medical doctor taking care of over 12,000 people. The important thing is the body naturally heals itself. So does the planet. And what we have to do is the obvious thing, of course, is to get rid of the carbon dioxide, the greenhouse gases. And we're all directed in the right ways to do that. Everybody's willing to do that. But that's going to take a long time. It's going to be, somewhat expensive, and it's also in control of people who have all the money and all the power.
Right. And that's the biggest problem.
Dietary change is something that every individual can do right now. You can make a statement that actually makes a big contribution to cleaning up the planet by changing your personal diet. And again, we're talking about giving up the livestock, the cheese, the meat, and so on. You know, people don't realize that dairy products are such a huge contributor to the problem. Remember I said that cows, they take a tremendous amount of grazing land.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
They have a large amount of methane excretion because of their burps. Their waste products produce nitrous oxide, which is 300 times more powerful than carbon dioxide. So the animals are, they're the main contributors. And basically they have to... They have to be a minimal part of the diet, but that's hard for people to understand. It's easier for them to understand. Look, it's better to give them up.
Before we go to calls next hour, let's talk a little bit about your starch solution.
Let
me really quickly just mention some starchy foods for people who might not know what they are.
Well,
potatoes, rice.
If you had to choose the most efficient food, it would be potatoes. Sweet potatoes would be great. We're talking about corn, rice. Beans, peas, lentils.
Not even nuts, cookies. Those are all starchy, aren't they?
Not quite, George. Not in my book. I know that grandkids like the cookies, but it's not. You know, it's not part of the program.
It's not in your diet.
No. What we're talking about is a diet of oatmeal for breakfast, hash browns for breakfast,
pastas. What about they?
Pardon me.
What about pastas?
Yeah, pasta would be great. Mashed potatoes. know, Mary and I, Mary's my wife and partner for 50 years. Mary and I eat a very simple diet. We have oatmeal every morning for breakfast. For lunch and dinner, we have similar things. We'll have bean burritos. We'll have spaghetti and marinara sauce, mushu vegetables and rice, just a few different things that we repeat over and over and over again. Very tasty, very satisfying.
Aren't some vegetables starchy?
Well, they no, they're not. Green, yellow vegetables are actually non-starchy, like kale and lettuce and cabbage and cauliflower and so on.
But corn is. Corn is starchy, isn't it?
Corn is starch. In fact, corn is one of the leading food crops in the world, and probably the leading.
Oh, of course.
Rice, corn, and potatoes feed most of the world.
We also make ethanol out of corn, don't we?
We do. We do. And some people object to that as a waste of good corn.
I don't know. I think we can make enough for the whole planet, can't we?
Well, we have a possibility. What I'd like to tell people when we get back is that this is a real possibility. And I want to give an example that happened during World War One.
Okay.
During World War One, 3 million people in 3 million Danish people changed their diet so that they wouldn't have to starve to death between 1914 and 1918. Now, I'd like to tell you, when we get back, a little bit of a story about the Keel Hinhidi.
Go ahead. You've got about 4 minutes.
All right. Well, what happened is during World War One, between 1914 and 1918, we had the British blockade of the North Sea. And Denmark was effective, of course, because they were in that blockade. Well, the Germans, they were following the teachings of a guy named Karl Voigt. And they believed protein was very important. So did the British. And so as a result, they continued to maintain a diet based around the basic four food groups that included high-protein foods. In Germany, 400,000 people died of malnutrition between 1914 and 1918. Well, Mikael Hinhede, he was a nutritionist in Denmark. What he did is he told the population of 3 million people that the way we're going to survive World War One is we're going to eat the foods that the animals eat instead of the animals. So they killed 80% of the pigs. Only the rich people in Copenhagen could have beef, and only the pork farmers would be able to have pork. Otherwise, they ate potatoes and soybeans, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
George, they went through the 4 years without ever being hungry. They cut the death rate from all diseases to the lowest death rate that Denmark has ever seen. They dropped it by 34%.
Wow.
They saved 1,350 lives during that period of time of 4 years. And again, the Germans, who kept with the basic philosophy of a good diet, 400,000 of them died of malnutrition. Not a single person in Denmark was hungry during the entire 4 years. And this is due to Mikael Hinhede saying to the population, look, we've got to stop wasting the food by feeding the animals and then eating the animals. So we have that choice. If you can do it for 3 million people, George, we can do it for a planet of 7 billion. We just need the leaders. We need to have people realize, I know they believe that we're in trouble, but they have to believe enough so they'll take action. And that's what I'm looking for. We can do this.
How did you find that starch is the key to proper human nutrition? How did you find
that? It's been the diet that people have eaten through all of human history. You just have to look at history. For example, if you think of Asia, you think of 5,000 years of rice eating. You think of Central America. You think of the people of the corn, the Aztecs and the Mayans. They lived for 1,300 years on corn. If you think about South America and the Andes and the Incas, you think about potatoes. They have 400 different species of potatoes. They lived on potatoes almost as their entire diet, except for when the Incas went to battle and then they switched to quinoa because quinoa was lighter and they could carry it to battle. The American Indian lived on a diet of basically corn. We're talking about a traditional diet of human beings. I was corrected, George. I used to say there were 10 billion people that walked planet Earth. A professor called me up and said, no, there's been 100 billion people that walked this Earth. And then we got around to talking about the fact that 99.99% of these people have obtained the bulk of their calories from starch, different kinds of grains, underground storage organs like potatoes, you know, tubers.
Well, the Irish lived on potatoes, didn't they?
They did, and they acted it quite well until we had the Irish.
I mean, I'm not sure I'd want to eat all potatoes all the time.
Well, you know, George, it's really not a bad idea. He actually took one of his subjects named Matheson and raised him on a diet of only potatoes and some fat for a year and a half. You know, mashed potatoes. Hey, look, George, mashed potatoes are really good.
Well, they're the best.
Nice gravy over them.
They're the best. You can't beat that. Hold on, John. We're going to come up to the top of the hour. We'll come back. We'll talk more. Plus, we'll take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM with Dr. John McDougall, the healthiest diet on the planet.